All right, today is February 22nd, 2012. My name is Pete Wright, and I am in the hotel in Akron, Ohio, interviewing. And tell us your name.
My name is Josh Koch.
Josh Koch. And you got Josh, you were basically raised in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Lancaster. And on our website, under the success stories, we have you featured. That was a article that went up several years ago. Then we had an update to the article about a year or so ago. So I thought this might be a good time to provide another update to the article and the success story. First, for background, during the time that you were in public school, you had several different disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Would you tell us what those disabilities were? Tell us the name of each one and a little information about each one of the disabilities.
Sure. In third grade, I was diagnosed with OCD, which is obsessive compulsive disorder.
All right, OCD.
And then a year or so later, I was diagnosed with Tourette's syndrome.
Tourette's, you have basically vocal tics and utterances of
mm-hmm.
sorts?
It started out with just motor tics, eye blinking, and then in the middle school years it became to very vocal tics. I shouted out just sounds and sometimes words.
In class?
I tried to hold it in as much in class as I could.
But it would become more pronounced at home?
It would become very pronounced at home, and so the difficulty became I would spend all school day trying to hold in these tics, and I was concentrating more on that than on my schoolwork.
Okay.
And I would leave the classroom to go release these tics in the bathroom or in the hallway and be missing class. And also, I would have voice fluctuations, so my voice would get higher, almost as a decibel level, and then it would go softer and higher and then softer. And so the teachers would always tell me to keep my voice down. But that was kind of my way of releasing the tics without.
And then you also had some other issues?
And then I had nonverbal learning disabilities. That wasn't diagnosed till about high school.
Which resulted in some difficulty in what specific skill area?
Nonverbal learning disabilities. Specifically, written expression.
So problems with written language and writing.
Mm-hmm.
Was it a graphomotor problem, organizational problem, or both?
Both. I had a lot of dysgraphia.
Dysgraphia.
Handwriting to this day remains awful.
Yeah, poor handwriting even to this day.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And but when my teachers would talk to me, they didn't see anything wrong. I had a higher.
You could express yourself very well orally.
Right.
Oral expression was very good.
Right. Above average IQ and verbal.
Okay.
So
besides the written language issues, what other kinds of skill areas did you have some problems with?
Specifically with OCD, I had a lot of trouble practically filling in Scantron bubbles because they had to be just right. And in my school, almost every test was Scantron. So it was hard for me to finish the tests. A lot of times, we had time tests, which were very difficult because I had a below average processing speed. And I often was focusing on the tics and the OCD rather than completing the test. And so I knew the information, I just couldn't get all the way through.
Now, where were you with the arithmetic, add, subtract, multiply, and divide kind of skills?
I was always advanced in mathematics. So I was in a year ahead of my peers.
And how about with reading? Where were you with your reading comprehension?
I was on par.
And reading speed?
Mm-hmm.
No,
it took me longer to read. And I often found myself reading out loud at home because it helped me understand things better.
So it was going in visually, but also the information was going in through the auditory channel into
mm-hmm.
your brain.
And I later found out that was most likely due to the nonverbal learning disabilities that I kind of learned that worked better for my comprehension.
I see. And you had several different evaluations over the years, and
mm-hmm.
the big issue with you and the school system that resulted in a due process hearing being requested, what was the issue? What was going on when a due process hearing was requested?
The big issue was eligibility, and the school thought that for both a 504 plan and an IEP, I wasn't eligible. That I wasn't substantially impacted or adversely impacted.
So despite having these disposed, and I recall there was a private evaluation that went in depth explaining the nature of them and how they adversely affected educational performance, despite all of that, the school system refused to offer you either a 504 plan or an IEP.
Correct. They saw the private evaluation, and even though we had requested a free evaluation through the school, they tried to avoid that, and then once they got the private evaluation, they wanted to conduct their own, and then they conducted their own and didn't find the same results except for the processing speed.
So it eventually went to a due process hearing.
Correct.
Now, at the time of the due process hearing, who were your parents employed by?
They were employed by the school district.
They were employed by the same school district in which there was a request for a due process hearing.
Correct.
And are they still employed by the same school district?
They are.
They are. My understanding is that there was, it was very unusual the way the hearing was held. My understanding, and I believe we have it on our website, the letter requesting due process was actually written by your mother.
It was.
What role did you have with the letter?
Throughout the time leading up to the hearing, a lot of the research, a lot of the analyzation of the law, and a lot of the letters written to the school were coming from me, but signed by my parents.
You wrote letters for your parents' signature?
Correct.
Did you ever write a letter to the Office of Civil Rights?
I did.
Did you write that for your signature or your parents' signature?
For mine.
And what happened with that? You filed a complaint, in other words, with the Office of Civil Rights about your school district.
Yes, and I was refused. They said they couldn't help me because I was a minor, and that I could ask another adult to sign it on my behalf.
So they basically would not even look at the substance of the complaint?
No.
Now, you filed a complaint, I believe, with the Pennsylvania.
Correct.
Did the state of Pennsylvania say the same thing?
The state of Pennsylvania actually recognized my complaint, and they were...
They accepted it.
They accepted it, and they were very frustrated with the school, and they investigated the school, but determined they couldn't make... they couldn't do anything to help my case because it was a jurisdiction issue, and they couldn't analyze question of the law,
okay,
of whether I was eligible.
The big question being eligibility,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not the disabilities adversely affected educational mm-hmm. performance.
They said that this was following procedure, and even if they didn't agree with the outcome of the hearing, that was an issue that needed to be under judicial review.
So basically they were saying it was a due process issue, not a state complaint issue.
Correct.
And so the request for a due process hearing was filed, and exhibits had to be prepared. Who organized the exhibits, the exhibit order, and prepared the exhibits and made the photocopies and everything else?
I had substantial support from my parents, but the requesting, gathering witnesses, writing letters to the witnesses, getting subpoenas for some of the witnesses, because some of the witnesses were employed by the school district, and organizing the evidence was primarily done by me. However, again,
you drafted the letters requesting subpoenas be issued for your teachers.
Correct.
And now the letters, though, were signed by your mother or by your father, or did you sign some of the letters too?
A lot of them were email correspondence.
Email.
Mm-hmm.
Is that?
So through my mother, my mother's email, a lot
okay.
of them.
You use her email address?
Well, she sent them, you know, she looked at them.
But you drafted them for her?
We drafted a lot of them together, but a lot of them I wrote.
Well, now, when there's a due process hearing and a case gets started, traditionally it opens with an opening statement.
Mm-hmm.
And so who made the opening statement on your behalf?
I did.
You did the opening statement?
Correct.
Well, now, at the end of the hearing, there's traditionally a closing statement. Who did that closing statement on your behalf?
I did the closing statement.
So you did your own opening and closing.
Correct.
Okay, but now the real meat of a case so often is in the examination of witnesses, both the direct exam of your witnesses and the cross-examination of the school's witnesses. Who did the direct examination of your witnesses?
I did.
You did the direct exam?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that is something else. Now, cross-examination is really a very difficult process. You have to be very careful when you do cross because you can really hurt yourself. And usually the witnesses on the other side want to give answers to help their case, not your case. So who did the cross-examination of your witness, of the school system's witnesses?
I did that as well.
You did the cross. Did you do any outside reading at all about how to do cross-examination?
I consulted with an attorney.
You talked with an attorney, mm-hmm. and that person walked you through some of the pitfalls of cross-examination?
Correct.
And so what do you remember today from that both experience and the lessons you learned before undertaking cross?
I mean, you had to be really careful that the questions you asked weren't going to hurt you in the long run, especially because you don't really have much control over what they're going to respond to. So you had to ask questions in such a way that they were kind of locked into giving you the response that you were looking for.
They called for a clean, short response.
Right.
You don't allow the witness to go off. And did you learn about not asking questions that start with why and mm-hmm. open-ended questions?
Right.
So you don't ask why. Well, the five W's: who, why, what, when, where, how.
Right.
And explain the five W's plus H plus E. You don't ask those kinds of questions because you'll get a long answer mm-hmm. that you don't want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you. That's impressive. So you went to due process, and how did the hearing officer rule?
Hearing officer initially ruled with the school district.
In favor of the school system.
Mm-hmm.
So then it went up on appeal. Who took it up on appeal?
I wrote to the appeal board.
You did. You requested the review.
Mm-hmm.
And Pennsylvania is what they call a two-tier state. So in Pennsylvania, the losing party to due process can ask for an appeal that's to a review panel or a review hearing officer.
Mm-hmm.
In other states, the losing party can go straight to federal court. That's a single-tier state. So Pennsylvania at that time, no longer, but at that time, was a two-tiered state. So it went to a review panel.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us what happened then.
The appeal panel looked at the extrinsic evidence, and it was about July when the three of the members of the appeal panel reversed the decision completely and ruled in my favor and actually ordered compensatory education be granted.
Wow. They turned it upside down, totally
mm-hmm.
around. And
mm-hmm.
now in review panels and review hearings, normally there's not any new testimony and new exhibits. Was there any new testimony and new exhibits in your case?
No. The school wrote...
You write briefs.
Briefs.
Briefs are written as to
mm-hmm.
why they should uphold or reverse.
But no new evidence was
No said. New evidence. So basically, based upon the transcript and the actual exhibits, they went through that and came up with a totally different finding from the hearing officer.
Correct.
Good for you. So after that, then you attended that public school for how much longer?
The decision came in July, so for the next year, I was a senior. I attended with the appropriate accommodations that...
They were ordered by the review panel.
Correct.
Excellent. Very good. And then you went to college.
Then I went to college.
Where did you go to school?
I'm a senior at the College of Worcester in Worcester, Ohio.
So you've been in college for 4 years. What impact now do you find that the OCD, the nonverbal learning disabilities, the Tourette's have on you now after having been through almost 4 years of college?
It's difficult. A lot of times you need to learn to compensate, but the Tourette's and OCD have gotten much better, and the nonverbal learning disabilities, I think, are the thing that stand out the most. It's still hard to get writing started. Reading takes longer, and things just take longer in general with the processing speed.
The processing speed is still slow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with writing, do you type?
I do type.
Do you type Hunt and Peck, or do you type like ASDF?
Yeah, I type ASDF.
Regular, standard, traditional typing.
And I also have a dictation microphone that I'll sometimes use if I get stuck.
Like Dragon Dictates or
mm-hmm.
one of those kinds of programs?
Right, Mac Dictate.
Excellent. Well, as you may be aware, I also have my own written language issues and dysgraphia. And one of the things that I required both of my boys to do when they turned 11 was to learn how to touch type.
Mm-hmm.
No hunting and pecking, but touch
mm-hmm.
typing. When they turned 11, they both did, and they type everything today. And I type, last time tested, I was 80 words a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And that was absolutely what saved me going through college.
Right.
And the other thing is how to get your thoughts down on paper and the organization. And I realized someone working with me, I think maybe it was Diana King, said, don't try to put your thoughts on paper right away. Ask yourself the question and then tell yourself the answer. Talk to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Just have a discussion with yourself and then try to log in what you told yourself.
Right.
And I would start that out. Then you have to move things around. But that's good. Now, so the OCD and the Tourette's are kind of under control. And you told me that's in part due to some medication. You're taking medication now.
Mm-hmm. For OCD, correct.
And what's the name of that medication?
Lexapro.
Lexapro, and does that have a generic name? Or
it's a fairly, it's very similar to Celexa, but I believe it's still in brand name.
I see, all right. And then you were telling me that there's a new area of research with regard to Tourette's. Now, you're not involved in that research, you've just been reading about it, is that right?
Correct.
And what is that new area of research?
It's called CBIT, it stands for Cognitive Behavioral Intervention Therapy. And what it aims to do is take the same cognitive behavioral therapy that's been used in OCD and depression and try to translate that into a method of using it for Tourette's. And what it really focuses on is the premonitory urge that a lot of people with Tourette's get, and that it's kind of a feeling that occurs before a tic.
So before a tic, there's oftentimes a little urge that kind of you almost feel?
Correct, yes. Kind of like a lot of people describe it. This, the feeling you get before you sneeze, oftentimes someone will say, hold on 1 second, I'm going to sneeze.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that feeling, that sense, that comes before the actual sneeze.
I see.
So the hypothesis of the research was that if we can suppress that premonitory urge, then we should be able to suppress the tic. If we can stop that sensation, some people hold their nose, we should be able to stop the sneeze. And that has been working very successfully. There was a huge study done at Johns Hopkins with John Walkup and Doug Woods with that research.
This is fascinating. You are staying on top of the research in this area, even though it's not being used with you, but you're staying current on everything that's going on, it sounds like, mm-hmm. with all of the different disabilities of sorts. And do you consider them to be disabilities for you?
I think at a point in time they hindered, and that to some degree they still hindered parts of my life, but I think it's really a learning experience. I think the OCD helped me when I was going through the hearing understand the law, just the way the law is written, a very systematic and detail-oriented fashion, and that's the way I think.
You mean because of the OCD you were able to do a better job of understanding the law than perhaps someone else?
I believe so.
You believe so? Fascinating. Impressive. I think there's some truth to that, because, you know, I've shared with you, I have a touch of OCD in me, and if I didn't have that, I wouldn't be as obsessional about some things and mastering mm-hmm. concepts of the law. So you are in your last year now, and what's your major?
I'm a philosophy major in psychology.
Philosophy and psychology. And I know at one point you were really thinking about going into law school mm-hmm. in education law, civil rights law, mm-hmm. and that was a year or so ago, and now you've expanded your horizons a little broader. You've developed some other interests that have a legal basis. Tell me about those.
Well, I started taking some classes at the college in environmental ethics, how religion impacts the environment, and just environmental sustainability. And I really realized that there's some serious issues that need to be addressed that really is going to impact everyone, and if we don't deal with these issues promptly, that I don't think we can deal with kind of the subset of issues.
Are there any schools that specialize in having like master's level programs in these areas?
Mm-hmm. And I have applied to and been accepted to the University of Auckland in New Zealand.
Down under.
And there's a program, it's a master's of environmental management. And
wow.
So it's a two-year program focusing on different aspects, biology, ecology, psychology. A lot of the psychology I've been interested in has kind of taken a shift because there's a whole newer branch of environmental psychology and what it means to, you know, be a passion for the environment and how the environment can help stabilize anxiety. We find often that when people are in nature, they're less anxious than when they're under fluorescent lights in an office building.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
So
yeah.
It's just that type of research that I'm really interested in. This program has a very broad spectrum that can incorporate all the disciplines.
Now, they have accepted you. Have you said I accept you also and are planning to go, or is that still up in the air at this point?
I have said I accept. I'm still trying to work out the visa logistics and living arrangements and all the hurdles that come
and
with
the money too. That's going to be an issue.
It isn't. Yeah, student loans are always an issue.
Wow. All right. So then you said you had some plans after that that were related to law. Tell me about those.
I still have a passion for law. Through advice given through the school talking with environmental attorneys, they recommended not going straight to law school out of an undergraduate. And they said either take some time off or do some more schooling in the field you think you wanted to go into, so that by the time you go into law school, you're certain that's your passion and drive.
So you're going to get a master's in environmental law, then maybe work out in the real world for a few years, and then law school after that.
Correct.
And if I understand it, you're thinking primarily environmentally related law, mm-hmm. but you still have a love and a passion for civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll share with you, there's no reason why initially you really can't become duly certified, so to speak. There's no certification, of course, mm-hmm. but duly expert in both,
mm-hmm.
because they both have some similar characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
They are both the underdog in some respects,
mm-hmm.
and it's just like your own due process hearing. You got to get your evidence together. You got to understand the law,
mm-hmm.
and I think that given your own struggles and perseverance and taking the bull by the horn by your handling your own due process hearing and with your clearly staying on top of all the research, I there's no question that you're going to be a success. And I hope that you will stay in contact with me and keep me appraised as to the various developments so we can update this audio file and maybe our written file on the website.
Oh, so I'd be happy to do that.
Good. Thank you, Josh.
Thanks for being with me.
That will conclude the interview. Oh, it didn't record a bit of it.
Oh, really?
No, I'm just kidding.